You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, August 27th, 2025. Another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. From wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or watching us on social media, catching us by app, however you got here. Nice to have you along. I've got a question for you. Can the work week be done already? There is just something about when a holiday weekend is coming up, like Labor Day weekend or, you know, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Christmas, Thanksgiving, Parker Olson, we get to Wednesday and go, can we just be done now? I'm ready.
It's really funny you say that, because this morning I was putting on my shoes and I thought to myself, oh, on Friday I can sleep in because we're doing a not
we're doing
live
a best
show.
Of. Yeah. Yes. I will be again with the daughters in town. We'll be, you know, that'll be the one day I take you know, just for us to do some fun stuff together. And so, yeah, I mean, our live work week only has one more day after today, but I could go now.
I mean, oh, yes.
You know, yesterday was, as much as I complained about Sunday being gross, yesterday was the polar opposite without the polar vortex or the Arctic Express or whatever the
polar
heck it was I was trying to say the other day. It was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I actually stopped work for a time yesterday afternoon and went out to my hammock.
Wow.
And hung out there. Well, in part because, you know, the grandsons were out there and my daughter, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time with them. I can't just be working here the whole time.
True.
But still, I mean, it was just perfect out there. The day made even brighter by the Brewers winning last night. And Roger notes on Facebook, the Cubs lost to the Giants out west 5-2 overnight. So the Brewers' magic number is now 24. I like that.
That's really low.
Yep. So it was a great day yesterday. We'll get Brittany Merlot's forecast about what else to expect for today and heading into the Labor Day weekend in just a bit. Coming up, it would be enough for leaders from education, healthcare, labor, local services, for all those groups to call attention to the damage being done by the Trump administration on their own. But imagine if you get them all together singing from the same hymnal. Well, that's going to happen today in Eau Claire, and it will include the national president of the American Federation of Teachers, Randy Weingarten, talking about the important work to educate the public about the ways that we will all be impacted by Trump's actions for many years to come. Randy Weingarten is on a plane now heading to Eau Claire, and I talked to her about an hour ago before she hopped on her flight, and we will play that interview during the show today. Also, Wisconsin is the scene of a new lawsuit that is taking a familiar new approach to the impacts of a changing climate, and that would be the harm to children. We'll talk to Melissa Baldoff about these youth-centric lawsuits, what I guess you could call the literal cry of the next generation that wants all the rest of us to stop harming their future environment and health and maybe hand them a planet they can live in. We will, of course, talk about the closest thing the United States will get to a royal wedding. That would be Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce announcing plans to get married, and whether the veteran football player and the billionaire pop star can make time for wedding planning between his new NFL season and her new album release. Brittany's state forecast for today says it's going to be breezy today with a mix of clouds and sun. Our high today in the low to mid 70s. A west-southwest wind at 10, sometimes 20 miles an hour. She says showers are likely tonight throughout parts of Wisconsin, maybe a thunderstorm even. Lows tonight in the mid to upper 50s, a southwest wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Hey, along the way, if you would like to, like Roger just did in Stevens Point, you can give us your questions and your comments in several different ways. You can use the Civic Media app. You can then bring up one of the stations where you're hearing the program, and you can either use the text button or the voice note button and leave us a little audio note with your question or comment. And of course, we're on Facebook and YouTube. That would be the Up North News Facebook and YouTube pages and the Civic Media Facebook and YouTube pages. And you can follow what my team is doing over at upnorthnewswi.com as well. As for the Brewers and mentioning that they won last night, yes, for the second straight game, the Milwaukee Brewers jumped off to a 6-0 lead and still managed to make it a nail biter both times. But thankfully, they won both times. And last night, the hero was Isaac Collins, hitting a sac fly with the bases loaded in the bottom of the ninth to bring home the winning run 9-8. William Contreras hit a 2-run homer. Bryce Terang hit a 2-run homer. A lot of excitement, and again, had to have a little drama in there as well. Game 3 of the series is also at 6:05 this evening on several Civic Media stations around the state. And then tomorrow's game, the fourth and final game of the series, of course, on a getaway day, it is a 12:35 start time for the pregame here across the Civic Media radio network. But if we're really going to talk sports, Parker Olson, we have to bypass the Brewers and the Packers. We have to go right to the Kansas City Chiefs and whether their season has, you know, been detrimentally impacted by having a guy on their team who is a veteran player, but now is clearly distracted because he's got a wedding to plan. And if there's one thing we know about guys, is that we're always very distracted when it comes time to planning a wedding. I mean, we sweat all the details, and I'm not quite sure how Travis Kelce's going to pull this one off, but I wish him the best planning that wedding.
Yeah, I do too. You know, I want to read you a text that I got from a friend of mine, the commissioner of my fantasy football league.
Oh, the commissioner. Well, by all means, continue.
Important words.
Yes.
Travis Kelce just went down on my draft board now that he has a wedding to plan.
The people
are talking, and it's a big deal. This is going to be Travis Kelce's worst season ever.
This is or his best, or, you know, because again, Taylor Magic, you know, it could be, or he could really screw up and get injured. Don't get hurt, buddy.
Oh, okay? don't say that. Why would you say that?
Well, you know, break a leg. No, the guy is funny. Okay. First off, he's got that podcast along with his brother, Jason.
Yeah.
And I've also seen clips where he's mic'd up like at training camp.
Sure.
And I mean, you talk about loose. This guy, how much more loose could a guy be? You know, you're marrying one of the world's most famous celebrities who happens to be a billionaire. Life is good, you know?
And she seems cool. She's not one of those billionaires that I'm like, ugh. She's actually like, okay.
I have to say that, yes, I mean, obviously opinions on people can change, especially as they change as well. And I did listen to the full 2 hours, the podcast that the Kelce brothers do with Taylor Swift as their special guest, which was what, about 3 weeks ago, something like that?
Like that, yeah.
And it was downright charming. It really was. I mean, look, anybody can fake it for a few minutes of an interview.
Yeah.
We've all lived through that. But I mean, this was a 2-hour conversation that, you know, had all kinds of drama and history and feelings and everything else. And it wasn't like homework to listen to it. It was like a really good conversation. And you really liked the guys. And she came off as, you know, extremely likable. You understand her drive as a musician, but also her drive as an entrepreneur as well. And, you know, she had the right perspective when she said that she and Travis Kelce, actually, they have pretty much the same job description. And that is to entertain football stadiums filled with people.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, when you kind of look at it that way, like, yeah, they're both doing their job.
Yeah.
They both got their heads on straight. And so, you know, I wish them all the best. Yeah. There's, you know, life has no guarantees, especially when you add the factor of celebrity and, you know, just the show business world, the cutthroat business of music and of sports. They're both a couple of attractive people making their way in the world, you know, in their 30s. So, you know, it's not going to be all smooth sailing all the time. And yet I feel like, you know, as well as any other couple, they are equipped to, you know, weather the things that rock a lot of celebrity marriages.
This is true. And they have managed to make time for each other, which I don't know how that's possible at
all.
Well,
in that case, the way they make time for each other sometimes involves global jets.
And, yeah.
You know, remember, like, flying from, what, Japan to the Super Bowl or something? And what, did he fly to Australia or something like that?
So, yeah.
You know, they do have the means to do that. But, I mean, that's how it works in that world. No different than there are times that I showed up, you know, someplace where Sherry wasn't expecting me, you know, to provide support or whatever the case. So, you know, everybody has their own little ways of bringing the romance. You don't need $1 million or $1 billion to do it, but they do.
But they have them. Yeah.
Yep. I did. I just have to say, though, I did enjoy when the news came out somewhere around noonish our time yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, I said to somebody, I said, did you hear that? I said, the internet just exploded. It just absolutely, it came down. And get this, the old guy here at Courier Newsroom, the old guy here was the first one to put it on Slack for our company. You know, we've got a little water cooler channel, you know, where people just put their random funny stuff or whatever.
Sure.
And there are a lot of Swifties. And I think all the Swifties were busy texting each other. Hey, guess what? Guess what? And meanwhile, I was like, nobody else has put this up yet. Really? Wow. Okay, I'll put it up. And then you get the, oh my gosh, wow. It's like,
I saw a video yesterday of a TV reporter was about to do a stand-up, and she was in the Iowa football stadium, and she gets a notification. She looks at her phone. She goes, oh my God. She's jumping around in the stands of the Iowa football stadium for like 2 minutes.
See, now that you don't want to be that person. I don't want to do that. I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
I'm not going to jump around and scream. And look, even somebody that you would jump around and scream with at one of their concerts while they're entertaining you, that's fair game. But I mean, they got engaged. Let's be happy for them.
I thought similar things. If you're happy for them, great. But like, calm down.
In this big, crazy, often stupid world, we need these little moments. And in this case, because neither one of those two have given us reasons to go, oh God, what a jerk. You know, we can legitimately be happy for them.
That's true.
For at least this little moment.
And you know what? That's their point. They are entertainers.
Yeah. And I do what I said earlier. I'm not sure about how they do this wedding thing, because she's got the album coming out October 3rd. I know that because I listened to the 2-hour show. She got that. So, of course, there will be the obligatory tour that goes along to promote the album. He's got the NFL season. I'm guessing it's going to be his final season here. So, I mean, there's plenty of celebrities. They get engaged, and I mean, they stay engaged for years.
How much?
Or do they just run off? Do they just run off and do something quickly? Really, just very personal on Tahiti, you know, but something very quick.
My thinking is, how much of the wedding are they planning themselves?
There will be people.
Yeah. Yes.
And good for them. Again, good luck, kids. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
You You can stay up to date on what we cover at Up North News by getting our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up in the banner at the top of the homepage. You also get our Sunday morning newsletter that focuses on political news, especially around Wisconsin. In today's edition of the newsletter, it's actually what inspired today's Climate Check segment with Melissa Baldoff later this morning, and that would be the lawsuit filed by 15 young Wisconsinites ages 8 to 17, the case being brought by two nonprofit law firms and arguing that Wisconsin laws that tend to favor fossil fuels violate the constitutional rights of young people to life, liberty, and safety. These are lawsuits that are happening in other states as well and in other countries. And in some cases, courts are ruling that, yes, if this is a constitutional promise that we've made to ourselves and to our children to keep the environment clean, then our state laws had better reflect that priority. So again, you can learn more about that in today's newsletter and a little bit later on during our Climate Check segment. Tomorrow on the program, it'll be Thursday, so we'll have Joe Zepecki along, as well as Sean O'Malley talking about your money and the markets. Chad Holmes and Todd Alba will talk about what they're covering for Civic Media. Sharita Booker will have a rundown of some of the big events going on this Labor Day weekend. And then we'll also have a conversation with Kate Felton from Eau Claire, formerly of the city council. She's a small business owner, and she has a guest column in Dan Schaefer's recombobulation area entitled "Medicaid and SNAP Helped My Family. Derek Van Orden's Vote to Cut These Programs Will Be Harmful." So again, that and more coming up tomorrow on the program here, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the state stories making news this morning deals with the case of Judge Hannah Dugan. She's the judge in Milwaukee who's facing federal charges for the way she handled an undocumented immigrant in her courtroom who was being pursued by federal agents, again, in a local courthouse, and the way that she tried to avoid a kerfuffle in front of her courtroom. The guy was later apprehended outside the courthouse, but it led the Trump administration to try to make an example of her and file charges of obstructing immigration officers. Well, the case will proceed to trial, at least for the moment, because yesterday, a U.S. federal judge denied a motion from Judge Hannah Dugan's attorney to dismiss the case. And in a way, that's kind of good news in terms of, you know, strike one for sanity. Here's what I mean. Donald Trump currently has the U.S. Supreme Court in his back pocket. He appointed three of the justices. You can argue that all six of those conservative justices are right-wing ideologues. Occasionally, they have their moments where they appear to be more balanced than political. But by and large, he's got 3-4 votes that he can count on every single time. And it was this U.S. Supreme Court that said, in so many words, well, you can't really prosecute Donald Trump for things that he did while he was president, because if he believed them to be official acts of his job as president, well, then you can't prosecute him for that, which is fundamentally ridiculous. And unfortunately, there's not a Supreme Court of the Supreme Court where justices could say to those justices, are you nuts? Do you really think a president could like shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and say, well, I thought that was part of my official acts? Or in this case, you know, have a Navy SEAL team raid the home of your political opponent, or just the FBI doing what they did to John Bolton the other day. Apparently, there are no guardrails. There are virtually no limits. Well, Judge Hannah Dugan rightly said to this federal district judge, hey, look, what I did, those are part of my official duties. And based on, you know, what the U.S. Supreme Court said about Donald Trump, you can't prosecute for that. Now, the judge, Lynn Edelman, he was a former Democratic state legislator. So a lot of folks think he's going to be some kind of a liberal judge. He hasn't been in several cases that have come before him. He's actually looked at the rule of law and, you know, ruled based on that rather than partisan whims. And he looked at Hannah Dugan's attorney making this claim based on the Trump defense and struck a blow for sanity, essentially, and said, no, no, that's not going to fly here. No, he didn't say this. I'm saying it. He said in so many words, look, the U.S. Supreme Court is a bunch of chuckleheads, and I'm not going along with it. What happened here is not necessarily part of your official duties. Now, I hasten to add that he, the judge, Lynn Edelman, did not rule on the merits of the case on what Hannah Dugan did, only on this motion to dismiss the charges against her based on this flimsy blank check that the U.S. Supreme Court has given Donald Trump. So where do we go from here? Well, there is a chance that Judge Dugan's attorneys could appeal this rejection of the motion to dismiss the charges, okay? And that could tie things up for months. That's exactly the kind of thing that Donald Trump and others did throughout the 4 years of the Biden administration, was they appealed and then they appealed this, and then they'd make another motion and that would be rejected, but they'd appeal and then they'd appeal again. Then they'd make another motion. And that's why Donald Trump, a convicted felon, is currently not in some country club incarceration facility right now, but is instead making the Oval Office look like a joke with all of the gold leaf and trimming. And we'll get into yesterday's cabinet meeting at some other point. I mean, that was just a 3-hour vomit fest of cabinet officers falling all over themselves to, you know, lick his feet and talk about how great he is. We'll save that for another time. For now, we just wait to see if Judge Dugan does the same thing, or if it just goes right to trial and a court rules on the merits one way or the other of what it was that she did that day in the Milwaukee County Courthouse. We will have today's history lesson coming up and a visit with Melissa Kay from WFHR along the way as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We're back now, and we're visiting with AFT Wisconsin President Professor John Shelton, and a column that he wrote looking ahead toward the 2026 governor's race. The column is entitled "The Candidate We Need and Deserve for Governor in 2026. It was actually kind of a joint project with State Senator Chris Larson. John Shelton's here with us now. John, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I appreciate you visiting with us to talk about this. Obviously, the thing that gets talked about most is the who's going to run for governor. And, you know, we've got some people throwing their hats in the ring for that, for other offices as well. This gets more into the what, doesn't it? It's like, what kind of a person would you want to see as a governor rather than, you know, recruiting any single person? You're looking, what would you call this, characteristics, values, positions?
Really, we're looking at who's going to build the kind of relationships with social movements, labor unions that are going to be necessary to actually defend democracy in this country and build the kind of state that we all deserve. So, you know, I started thinking about this. You know, I'm president of AFT Wisconsin. We have local unions in Tech College, K-12, the UW system, state employees, public defenders are actually affiliated with AFT Wisconsin. So we have this very broad constituency of different unions. And a couple weeks before Governor Evers announced that he wasn't going to run again, Senator Chris Larson, who I'm sure many of your listeners know from the Milwaukee area, he and I were just sort of texting about it, right? I mean, there was all this chatter about what Evers was going to do. Was he going to run? Was he not going to run? And I remember I was in Woodman's, you know, listeners know Woodman's, right? It's kind of cavernous. And texting the whole time I was there. And so it ended up keeping me in Woodman's for like 3 hours, you know, just stopping and texting. And we were like, you know, whether it's Evers or it's somebody else, we really need some a transformative kind of politics. And so that prompted us to work with a group of other folks in the state. Some legislators, but also a lot of other educator union leaders in particular signed on to this kind of statement that we wrote. And it just so happened to come out the day before Evers announced he wasn't running again. And again, it wasn't about, you know, putting anybody on blast. It was just saying, like, we have an incredible opportunity in 2026, and whether it's Evers or somebody else, we have to have somebody commit to the idea that you have to work with social movements. You have to work with labor unions to not just show up, but like make their fight your fight. And that's who we have to have in 2026. So, you know, I've kind of been beating that drum since then. And I think this letter is all the more important since Evers announced he's not running, and now we're going to have an open primary. And so what I've been encouraging people to do, I think a lot of times labor unions and other progressive groups have this kind of idea that, like, well, let's get down to brass tacks and look at all these different policy positions and figure out which candidate is going to be the right candidate. And of course, you should look at those things. But in AFT Wisconsin, we're really looking at this as an opportunity, you know, to kind of have the sort of conversation on a state level that we didn't really have at the national level in 2024 about who is going to be a winning candidate, who's going to fight for the values that we know that we need to build the democracy we deserve. And so, you know, what I've been saying is, like, any candidate who wants to get in front of our members, we're going to do that. We want to give them that opportunity. You know, like, I'll go to campaign events, even though our union maybe hasn't endorsed anybody yet. I'll go to campaign events and stand with these candidates on the Democratic side because, you know, frankly, I think it's a really good opportunity for us to have the kind of open conversation about where we want our party to go. And we've got already a couple of good candidates who have announced, and I think there'll be a lot more. And we're just really looking forward to seeing who's going to stand with us.
John, how did we get to a place where if somebody is pegged as, you know, the quote unquote, the union candidate, that just does not go over well with people to the center right of the spectrum here? And why you see not nearly enough Democrats willing to embrace that they are pro-union. They're not just pro-worker, but that they believe in labor unions, and that, frankly, labor unions becoming weaker in this era of what I still refer to as Reaganism is part of why the American worker has fallen so much further behind, you know, the people in the executive suite. How do you overcome decades of that kind of characterization or mischaracterization of liberal politicians?
Well, Pat, I could go into a really long history lesson here that your listeners probably don't want to hear unless they want to take one of my classes. but the short answer to that is, you know, starting about 50 years ago, activists within the Democratic Party pushed away from labor unions and actually civil rights too, you know, sort of saying that these are special interests, right, that somehow don't reflect the center of American politics. You know, people like Bill Clinton and the Democratic Leadership Council, starting in the 80s. And that really kind of trickled down, I think, to a lot of state parties. I really do think that in Wisconsin, we're starting to see more and more really, really good Democrats who understand the relationship between not just being pro-worker, but pro-union. There's a lot I could point to. Hopefully, some of the folks I'm going to point to here in just a second, like other folks who maybe I don't mention, don't feel left out. But, like, you know, people like Chris Larson, Francesca Hong in Madison, up in Green Bay, Ahmaud Rivera Wagner, Greta Neubauer, the minority leader in the assembly, has been very pro-worker, very pro-union, has always showed up for us when we needed something in AFT Wisconsin. You know, so there's lots of others, but those are a few I can think of off the top of my head that I think are great. And, you know, it's not a surprise that, you know, most of those folks are relatively new to the legislature, right? So we are seeing more and more of those folks at the state level. That's really exciting. But to me, a more interesting question is, why aren't more, you know, like, why isn't every single Democrat in the state embracing that? And you know, these are, you look at these sort of ideas and people see them as being far left or something, but they're really just common sense, right? I mean, most people want universal health care in this country. In Wisconsin, you know, in this country more broadly, public opinion polls are supporting labor unions in insanely high numbers, right? Like, you know, we have the highest public approval for labor unions since the 1950s, when you had like 35% of workers who were in unions. And among young people, it's even higher, right? I mean, polling, there'll be new polling that comes out this Labor Day, but polling that just came out last Labor Day said that among people under the age of 30, labor unions poll at 87% public approval. And among people under the age of 30, the idea of striking polls at about 90% public approval. These are you know, you have a growing amount of people in the state of Wisconsin who are living with massive amounts of income inequality, can't find great jobs, can't find good housing, are getting nickel and dimed by health insurance if they even have it. And these are the issues that, like, they're common sense. And so every Democrat in the state should be unapologetically talking about strengthening labor, not just because it's good morally, but because it's good politically and it's good institutionally, right? Democrats have been at their strongest in this country when they have been backed by a really strong labor movement. Republicans understood this. This is why they went after Act 10 and why they made Wisconsin into a right to work for less state. So, you know, it's in their interest to do it as well. I'm really encouraged to see more and more Dems doing that. And I think it's going to continue.
We're talking to John Shelton. He's president of AFT Wisconsin, and what kind of values and qualities he'd like to see in a candidate for governor in 2026. There is a group, the Fighting Oligarchy Coalition, that backs an economic justice bill of rights. You have hit on many of the points here, not just support for unions, health care, public education and child care, the environment, a justice system that is fair. But I want to get to this particular point because it isn't all about unions and workers. There is a point here that I think is very important. Equitable access to capital, investments, financial institutions, retirement. And yeah, there are things for individuals in there, but what that tells me when I see equitable access to capital is it says to the small business entrepreneurs of Wisconsin that we see the struggles that you face to create jobs in this state as well. Again, having to compete with the big boys at the corporate level.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you know, the first thing I want to just make sure listeners are aware of is AFT Wisconsin was the first union to officially sign up to be part of the Fighting Oligarchy Coalition. We're really proud of that. There's a number of other really good progressive groups involved. You know, and all those other rights that you mentioned are important. But certainly, you know, the idea of having, you know, the right to capital, the right to an equitable ability to earn a living as a small business person, that goes back actually to the Economic Bill of Rights that FDR pushed for in the 1940s, right? And so, you know, you think about it, we have a progressive tradition of this country of being able to facilitate that, right? Helping small business owners at the expense of capital. And, you know, you look at, you know, North Dakota, for example, which has the, you know, it's a weird state to have this, but like state-owned grain shelters or grain storages and a state-owned bank, right? I mean, imagine if instead of having to rely on the big banking companies, there was a state, you know, state-owned bank in Wisconsin that could provide loans to small businesses to help them thrive in the face of capital, right? It also, I mean, it fits into everything else on the list of economic rights as well. I mean, the idea of, you know, if you want to support small farmers in the state, you've got to do something to regulate CAFOs and you know, these large agribusinesses that put their thumb on the scale of our politics. So it's all related, and you're absolutely right. Like, there's most definitely a place for small business owners to thrive in an equitable and democratic economy.
It is a good reminder that, you know, the progressive traditions that we know, a lot of people think they all came off of factory floors and strike breakers. But no, there was very much out on the prairies this sense from farmers that, again, they were going up against the big boys and somebody needed to stand with them. So this crosses rural and urban lines. It involves, you know, small businesses as well as the employees who are in it. So you're making the case that there is a much larger coalition out there than maybe people want to appreciate. So to wrap this up going forward, now that you've explained some of what you really want to look for in a candidate, what next steps are you taking or are you asking people to take as we start finding out who all wants to be governor next year?
Yeah, that's a great question, Pat. And, you know, I'll just say first and foremost, like, I like the way that you're talking about the urban rural stuff, because we had a Union Leadership Institute this summer, AFT Wisconsin did, and we had it in your neck of the woods in Chippewa Falls at the Wisconsin Farmers Union building there, right? Beautiful, beautiful building for folks who don't know it. So we're totally invested in doing that. Here's what I think people should do. Get these candidates in front of your communities and your members. We're going to be asking any candidate who wants to come. And if you're listening to this and you're a candidate or you're thinking about being a candidate, let me know, because I'm going to get you in front of our members at back to school events. You know, we're going to be having a big demonstration on September 18th for the UW system. We would love to have candidates there, right? Tell us, show us that you're going to show up for us and fight with us. And anybody who's not, say, a member of a union, you know, invite people to come to, you know, community gatherings, local town halls, local, you know, city council, coffee clutches, that kind of thing. Get them in front of you. See who shows up. Those are the people that you should support, right? This primary is going to take a long time. It's going to give candidates every opportunity to show that they're going to show up. And that's the candidate who should be our governor.
John Shelton is president of the AFT Wisconsin. John, it's great to catch up with you as always. I know how busy you've been. I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today.
Absolutely, my brother.
Still to come, an updated forecast for this Monday from meteorologist Brittany Merlot, and at 8:30, State Representative Francesca Hong. Live from the lake, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Remember, you can sign up for our Unabashedly Wisconsin News through our newsletters, a weekday version and a Sunday morning version that I put out on political matters, mostly Wisconsin, but some national as well. Sign up over at upnorthnewswi.com. The question of the week in our Sunday morning newsletter this time around, should Wisconsin keep or get rid of mail-in voting? And I just wanted to get a feel for how many folks agree with President Donald Trump, who said that Vladimir Putin told him that with mail-in voting, you can't have a fair election. And so Trump wants to get rid of it, I guess. And how do you feel about it? Now, there are a couple of folks that are not big fans of early in-person voting or of drop boxes. But what about mail-in voting? Is it too open? You know, in the olden days, you had to have like a doctor's note to be able to vote by mail. Where are you on it these days? We're getting a lot of responses in and want yours as well. Radio@upnorthnewswi.com is the email address, but you'll get that question first off the bat if you sign up for our Sunday morning newsletter, where we talk about what's happening in the political world, what's happening with your legislator, what's happening with our elections. And to help us continue that conversation on this Movement Monday, we've got State Representative Francesca Hong here from Madison. Fran, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much. I started off the show by saying you can sometimes gauge what a candidate is up to by their social media feed. But if you really want to know what they're up to, check their odometer. And it's clear that you've put some miles on since the state budget was passed, and we're in a lull between sessions here right now. And as I've told you from, you know, my time as a legislator, you know, we're going back 15 years here now, but there were definitely legislators that, you know, did not leave their zip code by and large. But it's been refreshing to see how many legislators are willing to go across the state to try to help, you know, win back seats that they don't currently hold, or just to talk to other events as well. So it certainly looks like you have had a very busy summer that way.
Yes, I think it's really important for legislators across the state, regardless of zip code, to be talking to Wisconsinites that aren't in their district. And I think what I found, and other legislators will tell you the same, is that we're hearing a lot about the same issues, especially when it comes to public education. I was in Adams a couple weeks ago and met a special education educator who was just really disappointed about this budget process and talked to me about special education reimbursement. The same thing when I was up in Eau Claire a couple of weeks ago as well. So regardless of zip code, public education is on folks' mind. And I know that it is an issue that unites communities. And we know when public education is strong. I definitely know in my heart that the community is strong.
Along with those travels, of course, we've got campaign-related events that are going on as well. We saw Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders was in Wisconsin over the weekend campaigning for Becca Cook, one of three Democrats running in the 3rd Congressional District. You have Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, who's announced for the governor's race. Milwaukee County Executive David Crawley says he's going to announce at some point. We have two Republicans in the race so far. I rather thought that we might actually see kind of a wave of candidates for governor early on. And I don't think that's materialized yet. And now I'm starting to wonder, will the field, you know, be as large as it was in 2018 or not? And again, it's just complete speculation on my part, but with a wide open governor's race, how do you think the Democratic field is going to look, and what do you want to see in that field?
Well, I think primaries, crowded primaries, are very Democratic. I'm hoping that there will be a candidate who will be bold, who, regardless of zip code, is exciting a crowd, but also deeply understanding of the issues and is presenting solutions, making sure folks understand how important it is to reimagine, that we have to have a sense of reclaiming what was rightfully ours in terms of progressive values, where that started here, championing conservation. And so I'm hoping that there will be a candidate who not only is progressive in terms of legislation, but understands how important it is to unite communities around the state on issues that they care about, like public education. I know legalizing marijuana is always top of mind for some folks, and I think it's really important to talk about how people can save money and have the state take on some of the costs when it comes to, you know, school meals. I know that universal school meals as well is one thing that we're really going to have to keep an eye on and push for as we're seeing this Trump regime gut SNAP and other programs that keep our children healthy as well as takes care of our elders.
Fran Hong is a state representative from the Madison area, and you're also a co-signer of the letter that was put out that we talked to just last hour with John Shelton, the president of AFT Wisconsin, and State Senator Chris Larson as well, which really called for the next Democratic nominee for governor to have a real focus on workers and especially union labor as a part of the workforce. Do you want to say other things about why you chose to co-sign that statement and what it says about those qualities we want to see in a governor next year?
One of the goals that I have, and something that I hope more and more Wisconsinites understand, is that government can be a force of good. And I'm excited when we have the Democratic trifecta in the legislature to just show how bold, progressive, and transformative legislation can be to deliver and change people's lives quickly. And so in terms of ensuring that reducing the prison population, and closing Green Bay Correctional Institute, ensuring that our public schools are adequately funded, that we expand the rights and salaries of educators and make sure all students have their needs met. I think it's incredibly important that folks understand that it is the state government that can really make a difference in their lives, much more for the better, that better is possible. And I think that letter, the reason it was important for me to support it is because it allows folks to really take into heart and think about what is possible and what can government do to actually strengthen our communities, give us more opportunities, and really give us the opportunity to take care of ourselves and our loved ones.
You know, when you get to these issues, you mentioned already the disconnect that there is in the current Republican legislative majority. And last week we had Matt Rothschild and Marisa Strano on from New America talking about the push for more citizen-led ballot initiatives, something that we can't do in Wisconsin right now. Mm-hmm. And when New America looked at all the states and said which ones would be of the 26 states or so that don't have ballot initiatives, you know, which one would be most ripe to adopt that? They pointed to Wisconsin because of not just the partisan divide, but also the divide between who's running the legislature versus the public's issues. I feel like in every Marquette poll, we see public support for all these issues, and yet it's a Republican legislature that is essentially ignoring the will of the voters. I'm sure that that's lots of fodder for what Democrats are going to be talking about next year.
I think we have had a majority party Republicans who are more interested in serving their billionaire donors, maintaining and I would say hoarding power, and they've ignored the will of the people and oftentimes the law of the land. And so it's, I think, the ballot initiatives are a way to maintain democracy and ensure that we are protecting everyone's freedom, especially their economic security. Because when you have lawmakers who are prioritizing the issues and what their billionaire donors are telling them, especially when it comes to tax fairness and economic security and how folks are taking care of themselves, it really is a detriment to democracy. It's a detriment to democracy. And a lot of folks, especially those in smaller communities, their voices get smaller and smaller. And we know that we especially need the folks in smaller communities to be louder about the issues they face, especially when they're so similar to the ones that suburban and urban communities are facing as well.
State Representative Francesca Hong is our guest here, Democrat from Madison. And now that we've talked all about, you know, the potential out there for, you know, what we look for in candidates in the coming year, Tony puts a comment up on YouTube, and I think he's getting frustrated with me here. He says, "What's happening with Fran?" Well, I'm just setting the table here, Tony. Don't worry, I'm going to get to it. Fran, what are your plans for next year?
Right now, I am laser focused on ensuring that we have a Democratic trifecta, a bold, progressive, and exciting Democratic governor, and a legislature that has a Senate and Assembly trifecta. I'm sorry, the Senate and Assembly have majority Democrats. And again, this is about ensuring that we are delivering for Wisconsinites. And so I hope that other folks are ensuring that the Assembly in particular has strong candidates and that we are investing in those candidates to make sure that we can take back the 5 seats that we need for a majority in the Assembly.
Could you conceivably see yourself as one of those candidates for governor or for one of these other posts that appear to be opening up as other people jump into various races?
I think right now it's about ensuring folks know what the legislature and government has the ability to do in our state, whether it's those ballot initiatives or ensuring that folks across different communities have their needs met, especially when it comes to long-term care and elder care, as well as care for those with disabilities. The care economy is something that all candidates and should be talking about. And I think it's important that, especially what's going on with privatization of nursing homes, what's going on with our disinvestment in childcare and public K-12 public education, that we work towards a more caring Wisconsin and let folks know that better is possible when we have a legislature that is bold, progressive, and willing to ensure that folks, regardless of zip code, have the ability to care for themselves and their loved ones.
And so I'm quite certain going to still be on the road. You've been at several events already. And it's a theme that we hit again last hour with John Shelton of, you know, what can people do right now? And that certainly would include either attending or organizing events mm-hmm. where a legislator like yourself might hit the road and show up.
I'm so glad you talk about, you mentioned organizing, Pat. Community organizing right now, especially when it comes to developing groups that are going to commit to mutual aid, making sure folks have strong neighborhood associations where people understand what some of their neighbors' needs are. I think, you know, gatherings and making sure folks have a you know, are thinking about how important block parties are right now. All of this is resistance, and community organizing is one of the ways, especially at a hyper-local level, that we can continue to grow power and push back against the fascist regime that is coming down from Washington, as well as the hoarding of power and harming of our communities that's been done by Robin Voss and a Republican-led legislature.
State Representative Francesca Hong from Madison spending some time with us. Fran, it's always so great to catch up. And I know you've got other events coming up. You're being a guest chef at places. And so thanks for making a little time at home to visit with us today.
Pat, always love spending time with y'all here at Up North News. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful day. On this Movement Monday, we should also tell you that there are things on the calendar that you can choose to be a part of. AFT Wisconsin, for example, has a Fighting Back event with Randy Weingarten, president of AFT. The national president is going to be in Eau Claire at the public library coming up this Wednesday afternoon. We'll visit with Jane Matinere coming up, and a few final news and notes items from Lake Wissota after this on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.